You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
And I'm going to go back to something I had looked at earlier in the Level 4 alert period. I want to play this piece today on the situation for babies in refugee camps. Anne Mearwood is one of the directors of Cheering, along with her colleague Irene Azar, who is based in Greece. Anne is based in Boston, working at the Boston University. CHEER stands for the Centre of Health Equity Education and Research in Greece. What they do in Greece specifically is work with refugee populations in the areas of maternal child health, health equity, and particularly in terms of infant feeding. This work is both inside the refugee camps, supporting breastfeeding and weighing babies and small children. They also train other organisations in these areas. Given they're not big enough to cover everything, their main intention is to train other people in camps and working in camps to be familiar with infant feeding needs and emergencies. I got in touch with Anne to find out what was happening for them in terms of the possible risk of COVID-19 in refugee camps. Just a note, this was recorded a few weeks ago.
What Cheering does in Greece specifically is we work with refugee populations in the areas mainly of maternal child health, health equity, and particularly in terms of infant feeding. So we are both working in the refugee camps with moms and babies, working to support breastfeeding, to weigh and measure and track the nutrition in small children, in babies and small children. And then we also do trainings for other organizations, which I regard as our main mission, actually. Although we do a lot of day-to-day work in the camps, really, you know, my perspective is public health. And I know that we can't do everything ourselves. We don't have a big enough team to have a permanent presence in the refugee camps all over Greece. So my goal is to train the people who are in the camps to be able to be familiar with infant feeding needs in emergencies. So, you know, just to sort of back up a little bit, there are international guidelines for this. So UNICEF, the World Health Organization, and UNHCR, all these big organizations that work in emergency and relief type situations and health have guidelines for infant feeding in emergencies. But frankly, we cannot see these guidelines playing out at all in any of the camps in Greece. We did a survey of 6 refugee camps in the Athens area, the greater Athens area, before we began, because we're a research evidence-based group and we want to make sure that we are offering things that are needed. So before we started trying to do anything, we assessed what was going on at the time, and basically the 6 camps that we did assessments of, none of them was doing anything along the guidelines.
Right.
For feeding in emergencies, nothing at all.
We can go into that a bit more, because obviously the current situation internationally is the world is sort of responding to this pandemic. But in terms of actual baseline needs and health and that sort of thing, a refugee camp is already dealing with many issues. So would you just kind of maybe walk us through what the reality is like in that sense?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this current situation has raise the red flags about international emergencies, but I would say that refugees are in a permanent state of emergency. You know, we are very worried, of course, about what's going to happen in the camps with this new virus. However, I'm already worried what's happening in the camps, because many of the babies that we work with have not got vaccinations against anything. So, you know, there's always the potential for epidemics there, because many of them are not vaccinated. In terms of the infant feeding, you know, the WHO recommends 6 months of exclusive breastfeeding, followed by continued breastfeeding as children are introduced to solid foods. And there's no question at all that this is by far the healthiest way to feed a baby. And the WHO also estimates that about 860,000 lives per year would be saved if infants were exclusively breastfed throughout the world.
Wow.
How this plays out in the camps, basically, you know, when we're in a talking in countries like the United States or the UK or Australia and New Zealand, you know, if a mother chooses to feed formula to her baby, that's not breast milk, but something else, she has access to many things that are going to help with that to keep it, if not optimal, at least healthy. So she can, she has clean water, she can sterilize things, she can refrigerate things, she can afford to buy formula, presumably. If she buys that formula, she's able to read the labels on the formula in order to be able to make it up. What we're seeing in the camps is if a baby is not being breastfed, many of those babies are getting completely inappropriate foods like cow's milk with sugar in it, because parents cannot afford infant formula. They cannot read the instructions, and it's not because sometimes they can't actually read at all. There are some people who are illiterate, but by and large, the language in which the instructions are written on the bottles, it's not actually written in their language. So they may be from Afghanistan and they're trying to read something that's in Greek, or it's come from China. So people don't know how much formula to mix with the water, and of course they run out because they don't have enough money to pay for the formula through the end of the month, and so they feed water and things instead. So I mean, the feeding that we're seeing is completely inappropriate. It's also very easy for children to get sick because people don't have access to easy ways of washing and cleaning and sterilizing 8 to 10 to 12 times a day to feed a new baby. And so really, you know, the burden of disease in these young babies is really highly increased. Whereas if you really were able to get people breastfeeding for 6 months in the camps, you would delay a lot of that acute disease, because children don't get sick when they're breastfeeding. They don't get very sick, or they don't get as sick as children who are not breastfeeding, especially in those circumstances.
In terms of what this then now means going forward, you've got people that, in terms of your colleagues in this organisation, that are in Greece at the moment?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
And so what would they be able to tell us perhaps about what is going to be happening now? Are there measures being taken to kind of stem the possibility of transmission of this virus, or...?
So it's difficult as an NGO to answer that question, because right now there are very few of us able to get into the camps, because most of the camps have been sort of closed to outsiders. There is some good in this, because that means that they chance of infections coming in, you know, they don't want people coming in that could bring in the infection into the camp. That said, a lot of the services are being provided by external NGOs, and so there's a lot of stuff that's not happening any longer in the camp. For example, we were the only organization that was going into these camps on a regular basis to weigh and measure babies. Some of the camps have many thousand people in them, and they do not have very many doctors, if any. So, you know, a lot of the services have gotten curtailed or cut off completely. And for those organizations still do have people in the camps, obviously the situation is extremely difficult. You know, the whole world is worrying about being isolated in a nice house, perhaps. Not the whole world, but some of us are lucky enough. Some of us are lucky enough to be worrying about what it's like to be isolated in a nice big house with a garden, perhaps, or at the very least in an apartment where it's just our family. The refugees are living in very cramped conditions, even in the camps in the Athens area where there are containers. You may have 6, 8, 10 people living in a container. Those are like shipping containers, if that's what you can imagine. And, you know, the public health advice out there is, you know, wear a mask, use hand sanitizers. I can't get a mask in the United States. I can't get hand sanitizer in the United States. You know, if I'm in a container with 6 other people, these kind of being told to socially distance doesn't work. So obviously, all of the people that are living in these camps are at extremely high risk. I mean, the only thing I would say, and I mean, you know, this isn't really a good answer, but what I say to the people that I'm in touch with still in the camps is, you know, thank goodness this does not seem to affect young people as badly, because they have loads of kids in the camps and babies, and, you know, it, you know, that's the reassurance. That's the only reassurance really I can say to people, you know, hang in there, try to keep everything clean, and, you know that it, in most cases, it's less severe in younger people, and they tend to be younger people. That's really the only hope. And then I tell them to keep breastfeeding, because we know that breastfeeding, you know, is protective against viruses. Breast milk makes antibodies to viruses. There's no way yet to assess antibodies to this new virus. It hasn't been there's no test out there at all, so we can't tell if the antibodies are in breast milk.
Right.
But based on everything else we know about other viruses, the chances are that the breast milk's already protecting the baby. So we tell them to keep breastfeeding, keep things as clean as they can, you know, and there's not a lot else they can do. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, we're using this as a teachable moment, not for the refugees, because they themselves are already trying to get this care, but to point out the fact that there's a real lack of things like vaccinations anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I've been saying for a long time there's going to be an epidemic in the camps. I mean, it's a good job it's not measles, you know. There's an awful lot of other stuff out there that could happen, and if this babies are not being vaccinated, you know, it's just an accident waiting to happen anyway.
And that's been the case for a long time, like you say, in regards to kind of any virus, any infection, any disease, it could have already happened. And these places, you know, they've kind of...
Yes, I mean, you know, I can't speak to all of them. I mean, we work, you know, I don't want it to sound also like there's any blame being apportioned to the Greek authorities. I mean, Greece is in an extremely difficult position here. They already have a healthcare system that's overburdened, and I have relatives in Greece. Part of my family's Greek. And, you know, the people who are Greek living in Greece don't always have great access to care either. So it's not like they're ignoring the refugees. I mean, I would say that the larger world is ignoring the refugees that are coming into Greece, and no one's else will take them, so they're all ending up stuck in Greece. And of course the system is hugely overburdened. You have a very large number of people that are coming in, and especially on the islands, you know, they just do not have the system that's able to cope with them. We do see that older children get vaccinated because they go into the great Greek school system. So in order to go into the school system, they have to have vaccinations. But we do see a huge lack of vaccination among babies, yes.
In terms of what you're saying about the rest of the world ignoring refugees, are there any movements from governments to be kind of stepping in at this point?
All I know is that they can't get out of Greece. People can't get out of Greece. That, you know, the world's obsessed with coronavirus, as well it should be. But this is also meaning that everything that's happening in the refugee world is taking a back seat. I mean, there's no other news, right? The news, you know, I used to be a journalist myself. There's no other news. The only news is coronavirus. Everything else on the planet appears to have stopped. And, you know, that's playing out in terms of other activities and programs and everything else that was on the front page. You know, we don't really even hear what's happening in the refugee camps in Lesbos anymore, because nobody's interested in anything except coronavirus. So I would very much doubt that suddenly the rest of the world is likely to take more refugees. I think that they're actually closing their borders, which may or may not be the wise thing to do anyway. I'm not saying that's a wrong thing, but the emphasis right now is on restricting movement, whomever and wherever you are. So right now there's no plan afoot for a load of refugees to be moved anywhere. We hear that they're trying to move them from the islands to the mainland, some of them, but I mean, that is, you know, that happens every so often, and from our perspective, a lot of the ones that get moved are the most vulnerable ones. So the camps will have suddenly 30 or 40 new mothers with new babies overnight suddenly, and you know, the camps generally, they may be basically equipped to put them in a place. When I say they're not equipped to handle them, they're not living on the streets of the camps, but they're not, like, they don't have the services set up to service new moms and babies
right,
arriving en masse all of a sudden in the camps. I mean, that it puts a strain on the people who are already there. I mean, it's just one big mess, frankly. It's
yes,
just one huge
yes,
mess. And this is really the last thing anybody needed in those kinds of situations. It was bad enough to begin with. And I can be quite sure that this is not going to improve the situation. It's like the last thing that the camps needed is something like coronavirus to come and not just decimate what's going on there, but also to decimate the country that, you know, potentially decimate the country where they are to begin with. I mean, it's not... certainly not going to make things any easier.
No, not at all. If we could, I mean, we could keep in touch even if there was more developments or if there was other things that you
sure,
could share.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want you to sort of market it like I'm in the camps on the front lines these days, because I'm not. We still have access. Let me just say one thing that I recommend and that we've done, and if we'd had more time, we could have done it more thoroughly. There is one place that we work in Athens where a shelter. One of our goals is not to be an NGO from the outside, sort of, you know, coming in and telling people what to do. One of our big goals, and this I do this, all the organizations that I work with, I do this for, is to empower people in the camps and in the shelters to do this for themselves. So not only are we trying to train NGOs to be able to do this kind of work, but we work directly with refugees. So I'll just give you this example. There's a shelter that we're working with in Athens, and we have a young woman in that shelter from the Congo, and we have trained her thoroughly. So she already had a lot of knowledge, you know, about mothers and babies and stuff, and she was something she really wanted to do. So we worked with her. We have provided a weighing scale and a measuring baby measuring thing for that shelter. We trained her to do growth charts, which means she can check the growth of the babies, and we worked with her to give her a little bit more scientific knowledge about breastfeeding. She already knew a great deal about breastfeeding, and she'd breastfed her own children, and she supported women in her own country, so there wasn't massive amount to do, but we basically empowered her within that shelter setting, and it's paid us back in spades, because now we have a person who's living in that shelter who's doing the work for us. And if she has, you know, we're paying her, we have a grant and we're paying her, and she sees all the babies every week. She supports mothers in between. The rates of breastfeeding in that shelter, as you can imagine, are very high now. And when she finishes her weekly consults, you know, we talk to her and ask her if there was anything complicated or anything that we could help her with, if she has any questions, so that she still has the connection with us. But that process, that thought of like empowering people to do this from them, from their interior, on their own, inside these places, rather than us sort of swooping in and fixing things, has really worked out for this one. And this has been one of our goals all along, but we haven't had time to implement it in many other places. But it's really great. So we do still have a presence in that shelter through one of the people that lives there.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And you have a great deal of faith.
Well, that's if that's what you guys would be doing, or ideally, right? And would that be what you would be doing everywhere?
Yeah, so we work with the women, and we also work with agencies. So we have people that, you know, we train people, not just women who live there, but also agencies. It takes a bit longer to kind of identify women who work in those settings that know, that want to do this and help them. But there are tens of thousands of people, and they're all in camps, and they can't get their papers processed. You know, they don't have papers, so they have to wait for their papers to be, and sometimes they have to wait 2 years. So while they're in that setup, they can't just go, I mean, they've no income. They can't just go and, like, rent an apartment or anything.
Right.
They're all stuck. People are, you know, trying individual ways of getting out of the situation, but, and they don't invest, which is completely understandable. You know, who wants to live in a refugee camp and say, okay, I'm going to be here for 2 years, I'll do A, B, and C? Their emphasis is on getting out and doing something else, but in the end, people do end up being stuck there.
In terms of what you might want to say, like, if there's anything else that you want to cover at this point, but again, we can totally talk again, but if you were speaking to an international audience, and, you know, we're obviously in New Zealand, very, very far away from all of this happening, but is there something you would want to say? Like, in terms of making people aware, right, like, this is what I'm hoping to do with this piece, is just get people to be thinking about, you know, other situations that people are in.
Yeah, I would say stop whining about being shut in your own house. If you've got a nice house, just stay there. Don't put anyone else at risk, and consider how much infinitely worse this is for people who are basically stuck in small places for years in limbo anyway, in refugee camps and situations. You know, that those are the people that we need to be thinking about, and those are the people, of course, that in all of this panic and all these you know, buying toilet rolls and sort of trying to find online psychologists to help you. I'm not saying that these situations are not stressful. Of course it's stressful for everybody. But there are always people who are a lot worse off, and refugees are a lot worse off, and a lot of the refugees are living in this kind of situation every single day for years in camps and in miserable settings without access to proper healthcare, without access to good food, good nutrition, education, and they're much worse off than us. And these kinds of epidemics and anything that's happening like this affects them much more than it affects many of us in a day-to-day situation, and it's an ongoing state of emergency for them. So just wake up to that.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.